Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
Christmas is coming and the goose is getting fat, and if farming today is any guide, and I rather think it might be, the goose doesn't have long left. Just saying the word tradition makes me want to sing it. Hello, I'm Adam Rosser, this is Game On, that's Andy Robertson, the editor of Games People.
Hello.
And also with us is Ian Morris from Everybody Plays.
Hi.
Christmas is only round the corner. There are, at the point of recording, let me see now, 19 shopping days till Christmas. And busy ones they will be too, if my experience in the retail trade is anything to go by. Ian, I think you've been doing an upsum of what you think people should be toying with the idea. That's the right word. Toying with the idea of buying this Christmas. Run us through, and Andy and I will critique as we go.
If you come into playing games for kids at Christmas, it can be very tricky, because the age rating on the box is only an age rating of the content, and on an age rating of the difficulty or the complexity. So a game could be PEGI 3 plus on the front, but if it's full of reading, a three-year-old's going to really struggle to find their way through it. So what we do on the website is we give games an age rating based on their complexity alone, and then a traffic light rating for the content. So we split it up into two things so parents can choose levels that are right for their kids. And this will run into a game finder, so you can find all the games easily just by putting in the age of your kid and level of content you'd be happy with, and you press a button and it returns all the best games for your children. In the 3 to 5 sort of age group, probably one of the trickiest ones, one of the games we've gone for is called Frozen Olaf's Quest. Obviously, everyone knows how big Frozen is at the moment. It's enjoying a second Christmas, doing really well. But the surprising thing, potentially, is that the game is actually pretty good as well, especially for younger children. It's very simple, it's very easy to pick up and play gameplay, and it's got familiar characters that everybody knows. It's 60 stages, so it's pretty substantial as well, and it's the sort of thing that kids are going to go back to and play again and again and again and again. We gave this out to one of our writers, they played it with their daughter, and yeah, they couldn't pull them off it. It's all very fun, and it's good for boys and girls as well, because it's not too girly and not too bloke-oriented as well, so it's kind of a good all-rounder. That's on 3DS and DS, and it's around the £20 mark.
Not too bad. Andy, what do you think? Have you played that one?
I've not, but I think these games, it's good to get that sort of advice, because they can be really hit and miss. So hearing that, it means it's one I'll check out. But these, I think you do have to be careful of these sort of movie tie-ins, because often, particularly if it's only on a single format, they can just be sort of kicked out the door. So that's a good tip, I think.
No, there we go. On we go, Ian. What's next?
But one of the ones people seem to manage all right with, which is perhaps surprising, is Mario Kart 8. It's fairly simple, it's good for the family, it's a local multiplayer, so it does 4 players on the same console, and you don't need that much equipment to get going. All you'll need to have 4-player fun is a gamepad, which comes with the console, and 3 Wii remotes. So it's a Wii U exclusive, but it's also one of the best games on the console, and it's great for families.
The trick of that one, of course, though, Ian, it needs a Wii U, doesn't it?
Yeah, but the thing is, if you're looking to buy games for kids, you've got a family, then the Wii U is a fantastic console to be going for, and arguably has more stuff on it than the Xbox One or the PS4.
That is very true. Andy, you wanted to come in.
I like Mario Kart 8, particularly because it's got the sort of tilt controls, and you know, you're talking about a younger end of the spectrum, and that seems to be sort of an instinct to touch or to rotate the controller rather than use sticks and buttons. And I know that when my kids were a little bit younger, that was a good sort of entry point for them. And of course, Mario Kart 8 also supports the Amiibo toy figures that Nintendo are just releasing. And that'll unlock, it's not a huge amount of functionality, but in Mario Kart 8 that unlocks some nice extra costumes if you've got particular Amiibo toys.
Go on, Ian, what's next?
Next up, we're going to the 6 to 10 category. So this is for like slightly older kids, you know, the way around the console a bit better. So the first one is Lego Batman 3. Lego games are always absolutely fantastic for younger kids and for older kids as well. They're one of those games that's kind of got a universal appeal because they can be played by anyone. They're very easy to pick up and play, but they've got enough complexity as well that for older kids they're going to be engaged, and for adults as well. The advantage is, of course, it does 2-player co-op. Anyone can drop in at any time and help out with a tricky bit, or as may be the case, you might get your kid to help you out instead. The whole idea is it's a big DC sort of superhero tie-in. It's not just Batman. You've got Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, Green Lantern, all the other lanterns. But you don't need to be a big DC comic fanboy to sort of manage it. It's slapstick humor all the way through the cutscenes. Everything's very accessible. And it's a sort of platform game with lots of collectibles in it, so there's plenty of reason to go back to the stages and play. There's lots of replay value, lots of collectibles, lots of multiplayer fun. It's a great game for kids.
Andy, I think we can support that call, can't we?
Yeah, I like Lego Batman 3. I mean, like all the Lego games, they have their shtick and they sort of do it each time. There's not a huge amount of innovation, but that's not a bad thing, I think, in families. it's probably worth mentioning it is PEGI 7, so that's a sort of what the ratings agencies are advising in terms of the starting. That is an advisory at the 7 level rather than a sort of a legal age limit. So in that age group, it's pretty good.
Good. Excellent. Ian, next. What's next?
Okay, next one is another one Andy's going to agree with, Skylanders Trap Team.
What do you mean? It's terrible.
This is the it's the latest game in the Skylanders series. It's introduced a few new things. Again, nothing phenomenally sort of spectacularly new, but if you've got Skylanders from the old games, then they all work with the new one, so you don't have to worry about shelling out too much cash to get going. They call it Toys to Life. You have a physical base in real life that you plug into your console, and then you can buy characters. It comes with two or three. You can buy characters in the shops, and you place them on the base, and that lets you play as that character in the game. The trick this year is that they've got these traps, little plastic toys that you can place into the base, and that lets you trap villains in the game as you beat them. Only certain villains can be trapped, but once you've trapped them, you can play as them in the game. So that's kind of giving them access to a whole load of new characters without you having to buy a new toy every time. They don't quite do as much, but they've got a lot of good lines. There's a lot of humor in there. And it's quite funny hearing them being caught as well, because they get sucked out of your TV into the portal, and the portal has a speaker on it as well, so it sounds like they're coming from your TV and being sucked into the portal. It's all good fun. It's generally a platformer game. There's lots of beating up enemies, lots of leveling, a few basic puzzles in there. But again, for six and up, it's a good game to go for. Not too much reading again, so you probably could go younger, but it's the only potential warning is it might end up costing a lot when your kids see all the characters and decide they want them all.
It is quite an interesting sort of twist on the Skylanders franchise, isn't it, Andy? This business about the traps and the new portal, the problem being, of course, you have to buy the new portal, and that's like a £65 outlay, isn't it?
Yeah, and when they started Skylanders, there was very much the story was you buy the portal and the hardware first for the first game, and then subsequent games will reuse that, and that's essentially dropped off. Second game reused that same portal, but year on year now we have to buy a new starter pack, which takes you to sort of £50-60. I think it's good value though. You get those figures and you get some starter traps with it, but in the same way it's a collectible toy, so it's designed to be a gateway to buy more and more toy figures. So I think as parents you need to be aware that you can finish the game pretty much just with the starter pack. It's got things locked down a little bit more this year than previously. So it has special zones called elemental zones in the game that previously you could use your old characters to access. In this new game, you have to buy a Trap Master figure, which is around £10, to access a particular elemental zone, which means if you're going to want to see the whole game, you do have to buy more figures. And then you've got the traps as well. You have to have the trap of the right element to use the villains. So there's some downsides there, but there are more characters. For the first time, you get to play as characters without actually owning the toy, because all these 40 villains that you trap are all playable. And, you know, it's nice. It's very well presented. The characters are nice. I think they're nice because they're unusual. They're unlike the sort of Disney buff, slender male-female binary that you get, and they're much more imaginative. Like, there's a female blacksmith that I really like, and sort of the body shapes are more unusual than what you'd expect in the Disney sort of style of game. So there's sort of pluses and minuses, but on balance, I think it's a good buy.
That was the phrase that Ian used, toys to life. Now he said it, I remember.
That's right. Yeah, which is what Activision, that's Activision's trademark, Toys to Life, which is interesting because they sort of coined it and they started the genre. And it seems to be even competitors are using that Toys to Life phrase, but it is their trademark.
Ah, it's interesting to know. Ian, what comes after Skylanders?
Well, we're moving into like the 11 plus sort of category now. So it's, you know, older kids, it's hard to keep them engaged. Just those easier sort of games, they need a bit more of a challenge. So the ones we're going for are, the first one is Tales of Xillia 2. This is a Japanese role-playing game. It's all sort of bright colors, very anime-styled. So again, it's got plenty of appeal to sort of both boys and girls. It's a bit of a weird story. You play as a guy called Luger, spelt Ludger, but pronounced Luger because it can. He's a humble railway cook whose life gets turned upside down when his brother goes missing and becomes the prime suspect in a terrorist attack. As is always the way in these sort of games, Luger is the only one who can track him down because of the special gift the Kresnik family has, which is the ability to travel into parallel dimensions. So the whole plot of the game is that your brother is going to be hiding somewhere in one of these parallel dimensions, and you have to go and find him. Of course, that's all wrapped up in your usual weird Japanese role-playing game style story, where you've got big cities, you've got large world maps to explore, you've got real-time battles that randomly happen when you run into an enemy, and then you'll start this battle. They're just sort of like button mashing, fairly simple. fairly straightforward. So there's not too much of a learning curve here. Anyone can pick up and play and just bash a few buttons and you'll get the hang of it. It's not overly intimidating or complex. And it's probably the best thing about it is the characters. It's got fantastic characterization and, again, all the traditional Japanese role-playing game tropes are in there with the addition of the Fat Cat Roller, or Rollo.
If it ain't bonkers, it ain't a JRPG, Andy. Is that one you've played at all?
It's not one I've played. It does look like one you'd probably want to sit down as a parent and child to play. It's a PEGI 16, and it's been sort of flagged for violence. So I think as a parent, it's worth, if you're going to be going into that for a younger age child, being aware of what's in there. And the GRA provides some great information that you can look up online and also in store. I'm sure staff can let you know. And it would be, it's a legally enforced age limit at 16, so your child wouldn't be able to go and buy it for themselves.
This is one of those moments where you might even think about playing a game yourself first, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And maybe watching videos online, because to play a game can be quite a time of, take a bit of investment in terms of time. But by doing that, you get a first-hand idea of what's in the game. But equally, if you're playing it through with a child or with a sort of young person, then if anything is happening in the game, there's a chance then to talk it through because you're in context. And as a parent, you're the best person to make those decisions.
Ian? To be honest, I think this is one of those games that PEGI have kind of got it wrong on. I don't really understand why it's a PEGI 16. I mean, we've played through the game and we do our parental reviews, which do detail any of the questionable content in the game so parents can get more of an idea of what's going on rather than just going on the age rating. We give you examples of exactly what happens in the game so you can make your mind up for yourselves whether you're okay with your child watching or being exposed to that sort of content. But I don't understand how come it's got a PEGI 16. I mean, I know that PEGI age ratings are a bit weird anyway, because when all a game needs, for example, to be rated a PEGI 12 is a single utterance of God, damn, or hell. And that makes it a PEGI 12 straight away. And I don't know many parents who stop their kids playing a game because it says PEGI 12 on it, because it's got an utterance of goddamn or hell. I don't think many parents would class that as swearing. But the PEGI 16 seems totally out of nowhere. It's something I've written about before, actually, because it's one of those things where WWE, Tales of Zillia, and Sniper Elite 3 all have the same PEGI rating.
Sniper Elite 3's got the same age rating as WWE?
Exactly, and there's Tales of Zillia. So one is an anime beat-em-up where everyone's running around with crazy haircuts and smacking people with ridiculously oversized swords that don't actually do any damage. There's not really, there's slight amounts of blood in some cutscenes, but there's not blood in the battles. And then Sniper Elite 3, meanwhile, shows you x-ray slowdown vision of your bullet going through someone's eyeball. And that's the same category of violence.
Of course, yes, as we've seen in that game.
Just to give the PEGI side of things. So PEGI rated 16 for what they say, more realistic violence with blood, including characters being punched, shot and stabbed with large bladed weapons. So that's their account of why it's a 16. They also flag it for gambling as well.
This is that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle moment, isn't it? Right, Ian, on we go. What's next?
Okay, next up is Rune Factory 4. Now, this is a new one. It was long thought it wasn't going to come out in this country. It was released in Japan a few years ago. It managed to get across to America, and the localization was all in progress when the developer went bust. And so for quite a while, it's been suspected it wasn't going to come out. What it is, it's kind of an Animal Crossing and Harvest Moon hybrid, in that it's kind of part farming game, part role-playing game, where you've got to look after this sort of you've got to look after this kingdom basically, and you can plant your own crops and you can grow them all. It's all very sort of friendly and accessible again, and all done in anime style. It's not like Farming Sim, where it takes a degree in farming and agriculture to understand how it all works. This is very simple. You go and plant the seeds, water it, and you can harvest the stuff and sell it in the shops. In the town, you can talk to all the villagers and you can befriend them all. And if you play your cards right, you can even romance them and sometimes start and end up getting married and starting a family. It's one of those games that, again, goes down very popular. This one, with both girls and boys, you find that Harvest Moon tends to skew more towards women, but Rune Factory 4 tends to be a bit more down the middle. I know we have a lot of staff looking forward to it, and I know that a lot of people are looking forward to this one. It is a 3DS game. It's a download-only one, so you can only get it off the eShop, but it's also £25, so it's not too bad. And it is a full game. It's not just like a little sort of five-minute throwaway thing. This is a game you'll be able to sink tens and dozens of hours into.
So that pounds per hour equation is going to be quite...
Oh, and I forgot to mention, it also does combat. It's not just planting stuff and talking to people and romancing people. There's also combat in it that you can go dungeon crawling, you can beat up enemies, you can level up. There's lots and lots of stuff to do. It's a full sort of like fantasy sort of role-playing experience, but you play as for some reason a prince or a princess that has to go farming.
Right.
Because everyone has to do their bit.
All of anime life is there. That sounds quite attractive, actually, Andy.
Yeah, I like the sound of it. It's not what I come across.
Go on, Owen. Well, I think that's a hit from Andy and I. What's that? What else have you got for us?
Okay, next is a sort of family sort of thing. So these are sort of games everyone can play together. We've got two of them. The one is Little Big Planet 3.
Ah.
Yeah, now, it's one you're familiar with.
Alas, no. I don't have a PlayStation 4.
It's on the PS3 as well, so it's not a problem.
Good. Go on.
It's a mixture of things again. We do this a lot with these games. It's a platformer, and it's also a creation tool. So on the one hand, you've got this amazing sort of platformery thing where you play as a sack person, they call them in the game, a little cute character. You can customize them however you want, dress them up in costumes and things. And you play through just a standard sort of 2D side-on platform where you run through levels and collect things and solve basic puzzles and stuff. It's your basic standard platformer. It really comes into its own with the creation tools, where it is a best-in-class, very accessible level editor that lets you basically make your own entire games. The amount of stuff you can do with the creation tools is ridiculous.
Now, yeah, that is true, but those creation tools in the first game were very, very accessible, but they were also very, very complicated. Have they changed that at all?
They are complicated, but, I mean, there's two parts to this. I mean, the first thing I was going to mention as well is all four-player again, so it's one of the few games on the PS3 and PS4 that your whole family can get involved with if you've got enough controllers. And on the terms of the creation things, it is all very accessible. I mean, Little Big Planet tools have always been the most accessible out there. They've been more accessible than Disney Infinity, which I found really complicated and very hard to get everything to go together. Little Big Planet lets you make things look a lot better with less effort. And the big difference this time is they've got a thing called the Puppet Academy, I think it's called that. And it's basically a big tutorial mode that talks you through how to use all the tools in a sort of level. So you have to sort of like use all the various tools to solve puzzles to get yourself from one end of the level to the other. So it's kind of learning as you play, and it's a really good way to get people to learn how to do it. And of course, if the other advantage is if you don't want to get involved with all the creation tools yourself, you don't have to. Because the community will do it for you, and the levels they come up with are absolutely insane. And they're all easily accessible. They have a sort of a community hub in the game, and you can go there and you can search for specific levels. If someone's told you a level you should check out, or you can go in and sort of see like the most popular game, the most popular levels people have made, download them all and play them at the touch of a button. There are millions of levels available, and usually the very good ones get serviced to the top. So if you just go on the most popular list, you can easily spend a day or two playing brand new levels for free.
Free is always good, Andy, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a really good recommendation. I really like the fact that you've got these four characters now, and each one has different abilities, so you have to work together as a team, and in the family that's quite nice, as different family members pick which of the characters they want, so some of them can fly or pick up things, or they each have a special sort of move, essentially, and to solve puzzles, you have to have the right character in the right place, which is nice. And I think the game creation side is good. It seems to me that it's where you invest the time. If you do spend the time getting used to Little Big Planet, then you can get a lot out of it. But equally, in my experience is that I've actually got more out of the Disney Infinity toy box. That's probably because that's just where we've ended up spending a bit more time. Once you get used to the tools, you can create lots of great levels in sort of the various ways to make your own game.
Ian, is Disney Infinity going to make your list?
No.
Have you got one last
controversial
thing for us? Have you got one last thing for us?
We got Just Dance 2015 was the other one we were going for.
Oh, nice.
And, of course, Just Dance 2015 is it's one of those games that everybody can pick up and play. If you're going to get one game out on Christmas Day that everybody is going to be able to get involved with, from, like, your 5-year-old kids through to your 80-year-old gran, Just Dance is definitely the game. It's a collection of pop tunes, and it's very simple to do. You basically, on Nintendo formats, you hold the Wii remote in your one hand, and you follow little stick men as they come across on the screen, and you basically do whatever they're doing. It's just copying the on-screen dances. It's all very accessible, and it's a lot of fun because you often end up looking like a real prat. And on Christmas Day, that usually goes down pretty well with the family. Nice. It's got a decent selection of songs as well, which is always useful. So from like rock classics like Aerosmith's Walk This Way through to, you know, Pharrell Williams' Happy, Bad Romance by Lady Gaga, Let It Go from Frozen, and for the gamers, the Tetris theme tune.
And that's the one that to point out that it's got that Frozen song in it. So I think that makes it a must-buy for some families without anything else.
Oh, to horror. he's not put Disney Infinity 2.0 on that list, Andy. What do we think of that decision?
Well, I think if you're putting a list together, then you know Disney Infinity and Skylanders will inhabit a very similar area, so you probably should make a choice between them. But I think they do offer quite a different experience, and the Disney Infinity's focus on the toy box and game creation is a lot looser and a lot more, I guess, a more sort of modern video game rather than the sort of shared screen, fixed camera sort of adventure action that you have in Skylanders. And different families will take to it in different ways. And this year in Infinity, you've got that Marvel angle. So if you're a fan of the Marvel comics, then you've got all those play sets and characters coming through as well. But again, you know, like Skylanders, you do need to do a bit of research to work out what you need to buy. And there are some gotchas in Disney Infinity in the same way, both in terms of it expects you to buy more figures to get the most out of it. And potentially the worst part of it is that if you buy Disney Infinity 2.0, you can't go back and use the play sets to experience those original adventures from, say, Toy Story or Cars from the first game. You'd have to buy the first game. And I think that many families won't realise that. It does say so on the box if you read it closely, but that sort of lack of backwards compatibility, I think, is a downside.
Oh, that seems foolish.
I mean, the thing that really bothers me about Disney Infinity is the fact that it's so gated. I mean, I know Skylanders does the same thing, sort of, but Disney Infinity does it a lot more. I mean, any Skylander you've bought from any of the past games can be used in the new game, but on Disney Infinity, you can only use them in the toy box mode, which is less structured, and it's like only letting you play as your character in the level editor.
It just depends whether you think that. If you think, I think the way that people who like Infinity say, well, the toy box is the main event, and so that's where they use their characters. And I think you have to accept that. But if you're going to get good value from Disney Infinity, you're going to need to be the sort of player who's going to spend a lot of time in the toy box, either just mucking about, having fun with each other, and younger players do that, or actually creating something.
Which is what my daughter did, which is why when I said to her, do we need to get the next Skylanders game, she said no, because she's playing Disney Infinity. And she's built worlds of enormous size and complexity. It's just different strokes for different folks, isn't it, Ian?
The thing that just gets me is the fact that you can't play as any character in any of the worlds. And it's like, there's no real reason for them to do it, and it seems to have just been done purely from a commercial decision. So from the point of view, it's like, well, this will make them buy more figures. And it's like, it won't, because if the way I seem to work with these things is if I will buy the figures happily, but if you're kind of trying to make me buy the figures, I won't.
Yeah, it's a very good point. It's a very good point. You have to, when you're buying, you buy into the idea that you need to buy certain. I'm saying that word a lot, but you do need to buy more things, don't you, Andy?
And then there's the fact that it only comes with a third of the game, really, as well to begin with. The two, you only get one of the sort of story-driven co-op modes, and so you've got to buy the other two separately, and it's. That's another sort of bad taste in the mouth. The plus side this year is you can play co-op out the box, which was a really daft thing they didn't do for Disney Infinity. So everyone would have opened it on Christmas morning, gone to play together as a family, and they couldn't have done it.
Ah, well, there's all wheezes attached to these things, of course. I know that you look at board games as well, Andy. You could pick a board game for me you think that people should shell out on. I like Carcassonne, but that's just me. What would you pick?
There's a particular game. It seems to have two names. Either Rampage or Terror of Meeple City. And it's a sort of a physical turn-based game. Obviously, it's a board game, but equally, it has an action element where it's based on the video game Rampage, if you remember that, where you had dinosaurs climbing up and down buildings in the sort of, I don't know, late 80s in arcades. But it's a board game, so you have physical buildings created on the board. And then as you go round, you do different things to attack each other's buildings. But sometimes that is actually flicking a physical object at their pieces on the board. Sometimes that's putting your chin on your little dinosaur and blowing. And so it has this really unusual sort of back and forth between turn-based and a sort of real-time action that in a family setting, it just works really well. And it gets everyone involved. And it's quite simple, too, so anyone can understand it.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.